You're locked into the only podcast for Maine high school basketball. The biggest names, past and present. It's Big Time Hoops, the podcast, right now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Big Time Hoops, the podcast. And when it comes to big time coaches, I thought that's what I was getting into. When I reached out to this guy, I thought I'm going to get one of the big time coaches on here. But come to find out, he's actually a big time player. I didn't know this until today. Former Mr. Basketball, not just a basketball coach, but Mr. Basketball from 1990. Current Edward Little head coach. We got Mike Adams joining us tonight. Coach, how are you doing?
We're doing great, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
I found out a bunch of things. I was doing some research today, and like I said, I thought I just was going to reach out to Mike Adams, the coach. I didn't realize that I was reaching out to Mike Adams, a former stud and a big timer in his own right. So that's a pretty big deal. I'm anxious to find out more about that, about the playing days. Before we do that, we're just talking a little bit about how it's weird, and hopefully there's a season coming up here. As a coach, what has this time been like for you? Because you guys should be in practice right now and getting ready for the season, but a lot of uncertainty.
It's been a struggle for all of us, starting right from the summer. We were grateful. We were a week and a half, 2 weeks away from not getting our state championship in last year.
Right.
And we'll talk about that a lot. And, there's a lot of states, they stopped, right before they got to their championship game. So we're very grateful that we were able to get ours in, win or lose. Just to be able to have the experience of being in one is incredible. And then, summer basketball is huge for us. So we do a lot in the summer, and I love summer basketball. As much as I love our high school season, I think I love summer basketball even more. And we do a lot. We go to a team camp every summer. We've been to places like Marshall, and we've been to NC State and Princeton and West Point. We bring our boys out just all over the East Coast to experience something different, but obviously we couldn't do that this summer. Like you said, right now we should be starting up and we should be getting ready to go, but it's been a challenge not to be able to do the things that we want and to have the connections with the kids. I just emailed some of the kids today, said, at Edward Little, we went remote last week because we've got like 8 cases at Edward Little High School. But even before then, with the hybrid, I don't see any of my kids. I see maybe 3 or 4 of them in normal day-to-days. And you just miss seeing the kids and having the interaction with them.
So I've been talking to a lot of players recently and just getting their input, asking them, what they're doing to stay ready. And as a player, it's a little bit easier. All you got to do is, worry about yourself, stay in shape, work in your game, and you get ready for the season that way. As a coach, though, you're kind of responsible for a group of people. So what have the challenges been like for you being responsible for a group of people instead of just, an individual? What kind of challenges has that presented to you?
Definitely a lot of challenges. Number one, you're just worried about the general welfare of your kids, making sure they're okay, and trying to reach out to them, make sure that they're doing okay, making sure they have food, making sure that, that they're safe and things are going well. Then checking on grades, making sure they're doing what they need to do. As a teacher and as a dad, the COVID depression is real. What these kids are going through is we all are, but at least as adults, we can handle it a little bit better sometimes. But, some of these kids, they just, everything's been taken away from them. So you worry about them emotionally and psychologically. And then, you get the phone call or the text, hey, can we get into a gym? Can you find us a gym? And you just can't find anything. We were lucky. The spring was nice, so we have a nice outdoor court called the Troy Barney's Court now.
Yeah.
But kids have been able to get outside and, be as smart and as safe as they can. It's been amazing. You've seen a lot of kids out there playing with masks and doing the right things, and some not, and that's kind of a personal preference with some of that stuff as well. It's a challenge. It's really hard.
You mentioned the troubles and the issues that COVID brings. One of the positive things that people may point to with COVID is it allowed them to spend more time maybe at home or do things they normally didn't get to do. How quickly did that kind of go away for you? Like at what point were you like, okay, like I'm ready to get back to basketball here. Like I want things to kind of get back to normal. Like when did the itch set back in for you?
I think April. You know, if you did the house projects that I'm able to do, I'm not super handy around the house, but, you know, just from getting stuff done that you wanted to get done to organizing things, you know, like a lot of coaches, you know, I have a ton of stuff saved on my computer, but I finally organize things and put them in files and folders and all the places, categorize everything the way I wanted to. So you know that, but yeah, seriously, like by April. And again, when people ask me if there's going to be a season, or when they were asking right now, it looks like there's going to be, and fingers crossed there will be. I'm the guy that when we first left in March, you know, I was telling the kids at school, hey, we'll be back after April break, you know? and maybe I'm right. Maybe it will be this coming April break that we're back. But I really don't know. But yeah, we miss it. We need normalcy, definitely, no question.
Yeah. So we're going to come all the way back around here. I want to go back to the beginning because I touched on you as a player, and I want to kind of find out, you know, how you got to that point and then what took you from being a player to being a great coach. So I'm going to go back. So I know you went to Mountain Blue, but what town did you actually grow up in?
I grew up in Farmington.
And for most kids that grow up in small town Maine, it can kind of be a curse when it comes to basketball because you don't get the exposure that maybe some of the bigger city kids get. Or your access to the same facilities and programs and stuff like that. But for small town Maine kids that grew up in a college town, it's kind of a blessing, right? So were you a UMF fan? Were you a Beaver fan growing up? Is that like your first basketball experience that you can remember?
Yeah, you know, I was lucky. Coach Bessie is a legend in Maine high school basketball. And I'm biased. I played for him. But, you know, he's still coaching at UMF as an assistant coach. His basketball mind and his ability to connect with kids and motivate kids is just it's the best in the state and probably beyond that as well. So, you know, I grew up playing for Coach Bessie in the summertime and, you know, we really modeled what we do in the summer off from him. So my first experience was, you know, Coach Bessie and Mount Blue and having UMF right there. You know, we went to a lot of UMF games as well, but we were Cougars. You know, we were the Cougars, and we had more Cougar pride, love that. But I remember, you know, this goes way back. This I'm dating myself here, you know, playing when UMF would play, you know, St. Joe's, and Creature Double Feature, they used to call that, you know, and Husson and some of those games. Those were great. And I remember Mike Nelson, who's at TA now, when he played. He was a senior in college when I was a senior in high school. And Chris Hassan and some of those guys, so Vince Skulko. So, yeah, we saw a lot of great games. And I'll tell you, every once in a while, some of those old feeds come up on NBR of like Husson versus Colby or some of those games. Division III basketball, it doesn't get it the reputation or the credit that it really deserves. And, you know, even today, but, boy, back in the late 80s and early 90s, Division III basketball in Maine was – it was real. It was good. They were some great players and great teams.
High school basketball too, right? So and a lot of the former players that I talked to, they mentioned that when they were kids, they were the ones kind of sitting in the first row at these games, watching the people before them and kind of falling in love with the game that way.
Yeah.
Was that the case for you? Like you mentioned you were a Cougar. Like were you going to Cougar games at a young age and just loving everything about high school basketball?
No question. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, 1,000 people in that old big Mount Blue gym all the time. You know, seeing those old Morse teams that were just phenomenal, Waterville, Coney coming into town. The KVAC back in the late 80s was just unbelievable. The competition was great every single night. And we were there. Like you said, all my little buddies, okay, in one little section, they had the zoo crew on the other side because we weren't big enough to sit in the zoo crew. It was a Friday night affair in farms. Like you said, it's a small town. And the whole town comes out. It was exciting.
So it's changed a little bit in terms of, you know, what kids do in the summertime and how they get better. You know, now it's like trainers and stuff like that. Growing up, were you just outdoors on the playground, you and your friend just playing all the time? Is that how you came up?
Yeah, it's funny. Like growing up, I was a late bloomer and I wasn't real good when I was younger. And my parents weren't athletes. Coach Bessie had his summer program and people went there because that's kind of what you did. But I never really it wasn't really that important to me when I was really young. But like you said, I mean, growing up in Farmington, you're fishing, you're going through the woods and making forts, and when you're really little and stuff like that, you know. But really, when I got into high school, I played because I always did, but never really dedicated myself to it. And I remember my sophomore year, Coach Bessie sat me down and said, "Hey, listen, you could be pretty good." And back then, it's 1980s, 90s basketball. It's different than it is now with, Golden State and 3-point shooters and everything like that. It was get the ball in the paint. And Coach Bessie and his assistant coach, Chris Brinkman, who was a great player from Mount Blue back in the early 80s, they had a tradition of always having one of the best post players in the state. So when he told me, you have the potential and you could be good if you want it bad enough. I was always a coach bad, if you want it bad enough. So that kind of lit the fire underneath my butt to get me working and moving. And I went from, I wasn't super tall when I was younger, not that I'm super tall now, 6'5", 6'6", and, back then really skinny and not, strong or coordinated, to really motivate me to work hard. And then it was an obsession. Then it was, all day, every day, all the time, lived it, breathed it, and wanted to do it all the time. And, we go down to Hippic Field. That was our park in Farmington, and the UMF kids would be down at Hippic Field, and older guys that graduated from Mountain Blue, the pickup games down there were just people can't even imagine today what a pickup game like that is like when you have 25 or 30 guys and you get a 5-on-5 game going, and winners stay, and it's calling your own foul. You better make sure that it's a foul, because if you call the foul, then, people are going to kill you. They were going to be really mad about that. And then when you lose, you're sitting for half an hour, 45 minutes. Games meant something. Every single game meant something. They were battles down at Hippic Field at nighttime every single night. It was fun.
You mentioned being a late bloomer, and I was doing some research today. So obviously, the Bloom Lake did well, was crowned Mr. Basketball, but also your senior year was the only time you made an all-state team. So I find that kind of odd, or kind of, you don't see too often where someone who wins Mr. Basketball just kind of gets their first all-state and as a senior as well. So when did things click for you? When did it all start finally coming together? Was it just that senior year, or did it kind of just gradually build up?
Yeah, it was the summer of my senior year, my sophomore year. And, things were so different back then, in the 80s and 90s. To be a sophomore on varsity in a good varsity program, that didn't happen very often. And I was on JVs as a sophomore and had a good sophomore year on JVs. And our varsity team was really good. They had a guy by the name of Paul Searles who went to St. Joe's, a 6'7" lefty. He scored 1,000 points in 2 years at St. Joe's. And then tendonitis in both of his knees kind of ended his career. But he was a stud. He was real, real good. So, I wasn't going to play in front of or even with him. We were real good. And then my junior year, I played varsity, and our team we missed the playoffs by 0.4 of a heel point or something crazy like that. Oxford Hills and Coach Grafflin beat us twice that year on half court shots. So I'll never forget that. But it motivated me. And then that summer into my senior year, that's when I was in the UMF weight room working out with some of the guys in their weight room. I was at Coach Bessie's summer camp every day. I was at Hippic Field every day. And again, different times. I tell my son this all the time. Back then, Ernie and Gator were the janitors at Mount Blue. I'll never forget Ernie and Gator. Because in 1990, you can go into the gym that Friday at 4 o'clock and say, have your ball, and they hear a ball bouncing, and Ernie and Gator come over and check and say, "What's going on?" I said, "Oh, hey, Mike." And I said, "Hey, Ernie, hey, Gator." And they let you do those things. It was a different time. You could do those things, and you can't do that now.
Your senior year, was that your only time ever getting to the auditorium? I'm guessing you guys made the playoffs. I'm guessing you guys had some team success if you had the individual success. So.
Yeah. We had a good team. And I think, we had a guy by the name of Ryan Live, whose dad was the soccer coach at UMF for years, legendary coach at UMF. And Ryan Live was a lefty two guard. He went to UNH for soccer, surprise, and was an All-American in soccer. And, you know, we had a we were small. Like, I was our biggest guy. Our next biggest guy was, like, 6'1". So that was our downfall. But, again, Coach Bessie's a great coach. I mean, we were in the running. You know, we beat Presque Isle in the first round of the playoffs with Chris Cassavant, who was a great player. And that was a battle. And then back in the 80s and 90s, everybody's nemesis was the Bangor Rams, and they got us in the semis. But we were hoping to get one more shot at Coach McGee and the Lawrence Bulldogs, and they were phenomenal. They won states that year with Lenny Cole and Scott Walker. They were big, and they were physical, just the old 1990s Lawrence physical D, tough teams. But we were hoping to get a third shot with Lawrence because they beat us twice in the regular season. And I never beat Lawrence. And Coach McGee reminds me of that whenever I see him. So we're hoping to get another chance.
So one thing I like talking to guys about that I got to play in the auditorium was your auditorium experience and what you remember most. So, I mean, the capacity didn't change over the course of the auditorium's lifetime. But for whatever reason, if you look at pictures from like the 80s and 90s, it just seems like there was a lot of people in there.
Yeah.
And I wonder what your experience looking back on it. What do you remember most from playing in those auditorium games, especially against like some great, great programs like you mentioned?
Oh, it was like you said. I mean, Presque Isle's going to bring the whole town. You know, Bangor, obviously, it's right there. They're going to bring everybody. Waterville and Coney's going to bring everybody. But what I remember is when you stepped out on that floor, okay, it just went straight up. Those seats went straight up and the roof, right, V'd down. So all the noise from the crowd just came down on the floor, and it was deafening. It was an unbelievable. And you know, people always, you know, crapped on the floor and dead spots and all this and all that. To be honest with you, I don't even, and it was over 30 years ago too. So you forget some of those things, but you don't even remember those things because just the atmosphere was just so great. It brings everything else up. It was incredible. Yeah.
So this is my next question. I'm wondering, because you were a local kid, Farmington, Mr. Basketball, probably could have went to many places when it came to college, but you didn't stay local. You went to where? You went to Thomas, right?
Yeah.
So was there some controversy there? Did UMF feel hurt when you decided to just leave town? What was that like?
I think, you know, UMF was going through some coaching changes at that time. They changed coaches 3 or 4 times. In a short time, and Coach Dodge was the coach then, and we sat down and talked, and he said, "Hey, Mike, you know, obviously I'd love to have you come to UMF, but I get it's your hometown. If you want to get out and do something," it was the perfect recruiting pitch, if you will, and it wasn't high pressure, it wasn't, you know, anything else. It was just, "We'd love to have you. If you want to come, you can." And Coach Booth was at Thomas, and he's at Norwich now. You know, he was trying to build that program back up from when Coach Meter had left. Coach Meter obviously was a great coach, one of the best in the history of the state as well. And then when he went to UMF after I had graduated from college. But Coach Booth was a young coach. He was from New York, and he was just, you know, trying to make things happen. And, you know, I was a Maine kid, so I didn't want to go too far away. And this was before AAU, so I was a late bloomer, so I didn't get much exposure in terms of playing anywhere else out of that. But Thomas had a really neat program where it was called the Maine State Teachers Scholarship. And so if your grades were good enough, basically it was almost a full academic scholarship. And I probably, when they read, I think there was 10 of them that they had given out. And when they read all of the accomplishments of all of the award winners, I think I might have brought the average down a little bit with some of those things. But I was a good student, and I worked hard to get good grades. So it was really, you know, a no-brainer. I mean, Colby, Thomas, USM, and St. Joe's were kind of my final 4 list of what I wanted to do. And it just, I felt at home at Thomas. They were my kid. And my daughter is at Thomas right now, which is kind of cool as a freshman. And I think one of the things that I didn't realize this at the time, but like one of the things I told my daughter, because I heard this from somebody else, and they said, you know, go in the cafeteria, okay, and hang out for like 20 minutes and just see, do I fit in with this kid? Okay, is this my kind of kid? And Thomas was my kind of kid. You know, it was like wearing sweatpants and t-shirts and hanging out and, you know, just doing our thing. And that was my kind of place. And I had a great time at Thomas College. Best time of my life.
Was there any crosstown rivalry with Kobe? Like when you were there, like did the Thomas guys in the off season go to Kobe, or did the Kobe guys come to Thomas? Like, was there like a little crosstown rivalry with hoops at all?
No, not really. You know, I think, you know, there was, and again, this is before the days of social media. So like, you know, we kind of had perceptions of the Lawrence kid, and we had perceptions of the Colby kid, and everybody does and say, oh, that's the rich kid. That's the snobby kid. That's the, you know, driving my BMW kind of, you know, I mean, it was like, so they did their thing and we did our thing. And to be honest with you, Colby was freaking way too good back then. You know, they beat us by like 40 my freshman year. You know, they had, you know, Delanus and Whitmore and Rivas, these guys that were just like, Delanus was a Division III All-American, and Nat Gaudette, you know, gosh, he was, I think a year behind me. They were phenomenal. I mean, that was like one of the best D3 programs, okay, in New England.
So growing up, you were kind of exposed to two different sets of rivalries, the Mountain Blue rivalries and the UMF rivalries. When you got to college, did you have like any like memories from your childhood of like certain colleges that would come to UMF being like, oh man, I can't wait. I want to play those guys down the road. Like, were there any like hard feelings from being a UMF fan growing up that you were anxious to kind of take out on these programs when you got to college?
Yeah, I think, yeah, like, you know, like St. Joe's and Huston were always super good back then, you know, really athletic and big and strong. And UMF would always have battles with both of them. And, you know, a lot of times came out on the short end just because they were, I mean, like, again, like they were just so, so good. So yeah, looking forward to playing, you know, St. Joe's and Huston, just because that was always seen as some of the best Division III programs, in the state, and wanting to see if you can match up and beat those guys. Definitely.
So one guy who, he graduated a year before you, but I think he went to Huston, right? Ray Alley, right?
Yeah.
I haven't had anyone on the podcast who could speak to Ray Alley, but I know the name, and I think he might even still be playing nowadays. I think I know people that say he still will play ball from time to time. Can you speak to Ray Alley and the kind of player this guy was?
He was a bulldog. He was 5'9", okay, big, thick, strong, upper body, quick, great handle, and an unbelievable shooter, and a fierce competitor. I mean, he would just come at you all the time. He was tough and phenomenal. And then you throw, you know, they're always going to get a 6'10 kid. Okay. Every year it was like some guy that was at a Division I school. Okay. And something happened and he didn't go back, and boom, he's coming into Huston. Like every year it was a new 6'10 guy coming in. Okay. And they'd always have 6'5", 6'6", 3 or 4 athletes around him. And he was just, Ray Alley was, he was the real deal. Yeah. I mean, he went to Maine, when he graduated, from Vinyl Haven. I think he was there for, I'm not sure if it was a semester or a year. And he could have played at Maine. I mean, he was good enough. He was strong enough. But he went to Huston and he was phenomenal. He was tough. Yeah.
And you had some success too. I saw over 1500 points at Thomas. So you had a pretty good career yourself. So a lot of the coaches that I've interviewed, they said they knew, like, once they got to college, that they just wanted to get through college and then they wanted to get right into coaching afterwards. Was coaching in the back of your mind as you were kind of wrapping up college? Is that something you knew you wanted to do? Or did it only come into the picture later on?
I think, again, I was a late bloomer with that, too. I think going to Thomas back then, it was just a business school. You know, they offered, like, elementary education, but almost everything else was just business. And it's funny, it's, as a teacher now, in the classes I teach business classes. It's one of the things that we talk about is what motivates people. And when you're 21, 22, 23 years old, I think money is a big motivating factor. And it still is, even at 48, it does motivate you, but you know, not quite as much. So I thought, yeah, I want to work for a big company and wear a suit and tie and carry a briefcase and make a lot of money and do all that. And then, you know, I did the corporate thing for a couple of years. And I remember Coach Bessie asked me to come back and talk at his summer program one day. Excuse me. And we were talking, you know, I was talking about, you know, what I did as a player and how hard I worked in the summertime to make myself better and the commitment of what it takes, you know, and hoping that some of them would find that as well. And afterwards, we were eating lunch, Coach and I, and he said, "Hey, you miss it, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I really do." And he said, "Have you ever thought about getting back into coaching?" And like, it just, a light went off. I said, "Yeah, I want to do that." So, I quit my job and, went back to Mount Blue and, I got a job basically as an ed tech, and I was coaching JVs for Coach Bessie for 2 years. And then, like a teaching position just didn't open up. And, you know, I was married at the time and my wife was like, "Okay, we tried this long enough. It's time to, it's not working." But I eventually, I got a job at Lewiston High School of all places, and their athletic director there now, his name is Jason Fuller. He had gotten the head coaching job. So I worked at Lewiston for a couple of years with him, had a great time and a great experience. It was great for me as a coach because all I had ever really known was Coach Bessie, like how he coaches and what he does. And Jason Fuller is young, fresh out of college, you know, had never been a head coach before. And it's a definitely a different kid at Lewiston High School versus at Mount Blue High School. So I think it taught me a lot about how to be a better coach and how to be a better teacher and a better person. I really didn't know if I wanted to be a head coach, and I enjoyed being an assistant coach. And then the Edward Little job opened up, and Jeff Benson was the athletic director, and he called up and said, "Hey, we have an opening. We'd love you to come over and interview if you want." And I said, "Yeah, I'll think about it." And a day or two later, I said, "You know, I'll never know what it's like to be a head coach if I don't do it. And here's a great chance to see what will happen." And I had no idea. That was 20 years ago. I had no idea that I'd be there for that long. Cause I mean, again, it's, you hear a lot about horror stories about, you know, parents and everything else. And thankfully we've had our deal with parents and I'm a parent too. I totally get it. I think that's one of the things that's maybe a better coach is being a parent and understanding their side of it. But I've had great kids, you know, unbelievable kids in 20 years. Okay, I can't think of one team that I'd say I didn't enjoy coaching them or I didn't enjoy the kids on that team. You know, we've had good years and we've had a 2-16 year. I'll never forget that year. It made me a better coach. And it was a long year. It was a longer year for those kids.
Yeah.
But I had fun, you know, all the way through. Yeah.
So you mentioned a couple of years, you coaching JV, being an assistant. You know, we live in a society now where people want more. They want it now. They want it fast. They kind of want to just get to where they want to be, maybe take some shortcuts. What did you learn being an assistant coach? Like, what did that teach you? Like, being a JV coach and an assistant, how did that help mold you and get you ready to be a head coach?
You're so right. I think that's huge. I think, you know, back in the day, okay, in the 80s and 90s, to be a varsity coach, you had to be a JV coach. That you had to be an assistant coach for, man, 5 or 10 years a lot of times. And now we're seeing a lot of young coaches get put in a situation where it's really hard for them to be successful. And we've seen some young coaches lose their jobs because of that. And I think, you know, I think that we need to do a better job, okay, as coaches ourselves and helping those young coaches in how to deal with parents, okay, and how to run practices and how to run your summer program, okay, and not focus on wins and losses, but just making yourself better. And I think, you know, going to, you know, Coach Furbush is a friend, and I love being able to say, "Coach, can I stop in and watch a practice?" And be able to use that to make myself a better coach. Back in the day, when we had four classes, Class A used to start after Class B, C, and D. So we'd have a couple of weeks, and Coach Bessie would say, Mike, we're going to Madison. We're going to go watch Coach Maines. And we'd sit down and watch Coach Maines practice for a week and just, you know, see somebody else do it. And I've always said, like that would be a dream of mine, is to say, I'm going to take a year off. Okay. And even now, after 20 years, I want to go sit down and watch Coach Graffam work for a week. I love Coach Graffam. I want to see what he does and how he runs a practice. And, you know, I want to go watch Coach Hansen at Brunswick. Okay. I want to go watch Coach Millington and Coach, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many good coaches. And I think that the more we can watch them and learn from them, that makes us a better coach as well.
Something else you touched on too that I hadn't really thought about was, you know, growing up in Farmington, being in that Mount Blue program, and then settling in a place like Lewiston, then eventually Auburn, and just being surrounded by a different set of kids than maybe what you grew up with. What kind of challenges did that present? Because, I mean, I'm guessing it may not be the most easy to relate to having grown up different. So did that present challenges for you? I mean, it's tough enough being a head coach for the first time, but maybe dealing with different kids that are different backgrounds that you didn't quite grow up in yourself. Was that a challenge as well?
Yeah, I think it definitely is. There's no question. I think I read a great book a long time ago from a good friend of mine who suggested it. And the name of the book was Lead for God's Sake. And I misread the title at first. I thought it was Lead for God's Sake. You know what I mean? But no, it wasn't an overly religious book, nor am I overly religious myself. But basically, it was a book about a coach who was coaching this team that was supposed to win a state championship and all the pressure that he put on himself. And what he found to make himself a better coach was, it's about building relationships with your kids. And it really opened up my eyes to a lot of things that I can do better. And I think you're right. I mean, I think that in a community like Auburn versus Mount Blue in 1990 and in Farmington in 1990, it was probably 99.7% white and not an awful lot of diversity. And you come to Lewiston and Auburn, and next to Portland, you know, some of the most diverse cities in Maine, still not as diverse as some of your other cities in the country, you know, but it's been great to find out about kids. And a kid that played for me, who was actually a Muslim kid, you know, again, anybody in Lewiston, Auburn, that's Muslim, everybody's going to think they're Somalian. He was Ethiopian. It was Yusuf Iman, who ended up playing at UMF. We became really, really close. And that was a great experience for me to find out about somebody from a different country, from a different culture, who has some different beliefs and things. And what's great is he and I, you know, I took him under my wing when he was a freshman. You know, and I'm picking him up for some of the basketball every morning, and he's lifting with me after school every day. And really, he didn't have a dad, you know, kind of a father-son relationship. And I'm proud and glad that he looks at me like a dad. But we could talk about anything. You know, I could tell him when he was messing up, and he could tell me when he thought I was messing up. And I might have been, you know. But we could talk about anything from religion to, you know, things that kids go through to the struggles as a dad and as a coach. And it's really neat to build those relationships and find out more about your kids, because every kid has a story. And it's our job as a coach to dig in and find out what that story is.
Absolutely. So those are just some of the challenges that you face being a head coach for the first time. Another challenge too, like you jumped right into it. Class A basketball in Maine. Like that's not the easiest place to start. What kind of program were you inheriting when you took over at Edward Little?
I was lucky. I was really lucky. The year before I got there, they were young. They had a bunch of sophomores that were playing up, and they weren't ready, and that was the old SMAA. So they were playing Deering, South Portland, who was just loaded back in those days, and they still are. And they struggled. And the old coach, you know, he had left. So I came in. He did the groundwork. And I've changed the system, obviously. We played a little bit different than they did. But the way that we played was built for the kids that we had. And we really shocked everybody. We opened up with Deering on the first night with Nick Caner Medley, and he still scored 36. I'll never forget. but our sixth man, who was our shooter, he rolled his ankle in practice 2 days before. So I said, oh man, we're a man down already. And I think we only lost by like 7 or 8. And Deering was beating everybody by 40. This was game one, but they beat everybody by 40 all year. So we knew that we were going to be in for something pretty good. And we went 13-5, I think, that first year. Okay. And, made it to the semifinals and, got blown out by Deering by 40. So they, you know,
they made up for it.
Yeah. They did make up for it in a bigger setting. But yeah, I mean, that was just, but again, those kids were only juniors then, you know, so they came back the next year. Okay. And same thing. We had a great year and made a good run. And then we lost to Chevrolet and Coach Brown and, okay. And they beat us by 40. So we didn't have much luck in the semifinals the first couple of years. But yeah, I mean, I got lucky. I came into a program that had some players that were good. They just, nobody knew about them because they were just too young when I came into it.
And then the talent just kept on coming through. So as you kind of get a little bit later in the 2000s, so Troy Barnes comes along, Kyle Philbrook comes along, Bo Leary. So you had some players coming through later on. What was the evolution of the program? Was it? I always wonder, like, when a coach decides to kind of implement a system and make his players adapt to a system versus a coach adapt to the players he has. Like, how did you weigh that as a coach? Like, do you have a system that you guys run and players must adapt to it, or did you kind of learn that, you know, I'm going to base what we do off the talent we have?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I first came in, I was young and foolish and said, you know, we're going to do a lot of the same things Coach Bessie did, because that's what I grew up and that was my mentor. And then, you know, I learned, you know, I'm not Coach Bessie, you know, furthest thing from it. And I got to do my own thing. And like, we started doing a lot of the same things that I knew from Mount Blue. But, you know, as I grew as a coach and I understood, you know, we can't always do the same things. And we have to adapt to what we have for strengths and what we have for athletes and players. So, yeah, we changed it up a little bit. But a lot of, you know, what's always consistent is what we do in the summer. What's always consistent is, you know, what we try to be off the court. And we really try to stress that. And I'm a big believer that, you know, success breeds success. And you know, again, not to keep going back to it, but coming from the Mount Blue program, you know, we always had a good post player, not because, you know, there was always going to be somebody who was 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", but because, okay, that's what we worked on. It's something that was developed and grown. And, you know, every year at Mount Blue, there was always one or a group of kids who dedicated themselves in the summertime to being there all day, to getting up to 10,000 shots in the summer, to being in the weight room and doing that. And as a young kid growing up, you saw that success, and that's what you wanted to have. And when I got to EL, I said, you know, one of the first things that we have to do is we have to identify somebody that can be that kid. So for the next 4 to 5 years, every kid coming up is going to want to be, and it was Troy Barnes, was going to want to be Troy Barnes. You know, Troy Barnes, he was a freshman in my third year when I was at EL, and we weren't real good. You know, that was our 2-16 year. And I looked at him and said, I told the coach, Bessie, hey, you could be pretty good. You know, you could be pretty good. I think that you could be a good player. And, you know, he played football. He ran track. You know, Saturday morning in September, you know, they had a football game Friday night. You know, he's like, Coach, you're going to come pick me up? Yep, I'm on the way, 6 o'clock in the morning. Okay, we're picking Troy up. We're going to lift. And then he's going to his football practice. You know, he dedicated himself to making himself a great basketball player and a great person. So then again, you know, for the next 4 or 5 years, okay, we got that Troy Barnes card that we're holding out saying, hey, listen, this is what happened when you worked hard. I'm not saying you're going to go to Maine or Division One or play overseas, but he made himself into a great player. And like you said, you know, we had Kyle Philbrook come in after that, and we had Bo Leary come in after that, and it just kept kind of going on. And then, you know, we're at the point now, I mean, Troy's still around in the summer, you know, so, but he's old enough now that those guys don't remember him playing. They wouldn't have seen that. But we have other players that are kind of taking the place, you know, from most recently Wall or anybody else that have come through our program.
Absolutely. So you mentioned those guys in the late 2000s, and then you guys got to a point where, you know, you guys might have been favored to win a state championship. What was that like, kind of transitioning? I mean, you came into a good program. You guys were good right off the bat. But to get to the point where you guys were seriously competing for state championships, what was that transition like for you?
It was the first – I'll never forget the first state championship you're in. You're like, you know, I might never get another chance. We might never get back here again. I know a lot of coaches that have never played in the state championship, so you got to make the most of it. We played Thornton that year, and they were good. They were real good. And, you know, we had a team that wasn't big, but we were all smart basketball players, and we were up by 9 the whole game, okay? And, that's the one that hurts the most, because I thought we could have won that game, but we lost at the end. Some things happened at the end. Old guys that remember watching that game or remember some of the controversy at the end, but we lost it. You know, it wasn't anything else. We lost it. And then the very next year, the guys just got motivated to work even harder. And that was the USF and James Philbrook group. And then we lost to Chevron. So we lost back to back. So I was kind of worried that we were going to be the Buffalo Bills of Maine high school basketball, get to a state championship, but never ever win one. And then, you know, we said that book was a good indicator for me of what's really important. Said, hey, listen, you know, on our wall, we have the banner like every gym does. Okay. Have your state championships. In 1946 was the last state championship that EL had been. And I said, you know, we're always going to work towards winning a state championship, because that would be pretty special to be able to change that banner and put our year up there. But all the stuff that we do in the summer, that's way more important. That's way, way more relevant to you and the rest. That's what you're going to talk about for the rest of your lives. But they're still teenage kids. And even if you're not a teenage kid, you're still competitive and you're working your butt off to see if you can get one. I don't know if we were ever really favored to win one. When we beat Scarborough, you know, they beat us in the regular season pretty good. And TA pounded us in the regular season last year. But I knew we were good enough any of the years that we were in the game where we could have won one. But I also know, you know, a lot can happen. You know, balls bounce the wrong way and calls don't go your way. And you just got to keep battling and grinding and persevering and just make things happen. And that's what our kids did. Every year they were in it. They, you know, they battled and made things happen. It's been a fun ride.
You mentioned as a coach, like you wanted to see your kids succeed, you wanted to do it for the kids. And, you know, that's what makes it tough right now with COVID, is not being able to have this for them. But I'm wondering, as a coach, having, you know, lost back-to-back state title games, like you just mentioned, selfishly, were you like, man, like I want this for myself. Like I want to win a state championship too. And like, what kind of drove you and kept you motivated? Because I mean, I'm guessing that it could have been crushing, right?
Yeah.
It could have been crushing and a little demoralizing. Maybe not demoralizing, but like what kept you going? Like what kept you motivated to push through that and ultimately get a couple here?
Yeah, it was crushing, definitely. They were both crushing losses. You know, the TA game, we were up the whole game. And lost it at the end, and they won it at the end. I don't want to say that they won, because, you know what I mean, they were good. And the Chevrolet game, we were getting pounded at the start. We were down 17-2. Okay, that was the Indiana Faithful group, and Coach Brown is one of the best coaches in the history of the game. You know, and they were phenomenal. And they were kicking our butts early, and we fought back, and we had a chance to win that one at the end too. So they were crushing losses, definitely, no question. But I think it's just what you teach your kids, you know, and your own kids. You know, I have kids as well. You know, life is going to kick you. It's going to have you down, and you just got to keep working and persevering. And sometimes you can keep fighting and persevering, and it's not going to matter. You know, I could be sitting here today and have lost 4 state championships very easily, you know, and it wouldn't make me a better coach. Or a worse coach. But yeah, you want to win one. You want to win one. I mean, and what's really neat for me is after we won the first one and we had the parade back into town, seeing one of my players who I was really close with, and he's a police officer here in Auburn, and he was on duty, okay, and he was in the gym, okay, and he came over and gave me a hug and just big tears running down his face because he was just so happy for me because, and that's what he said, like, I wanted you to win one. I said, well, okay, that made me cry too. I'm like, that means a lot, but, you know, we don't win it if it's not for you guys, you know, every team that was before that showed these guys how to work. We never win if they don't set that example for all these kids today.
Yeah, you mentioned, so that example, you mentioned Troy Barney's, even though you graduated 13, 14 years ago, still being part of the program. You hear the term culture a lot when describing programs. Like, what's the Auburn culture? What is it that you guys have built and how have you built it that is just have this family atmosphere where all your former players are just, you know, still part of it? It still means a lot to them when you win or when the current kids win. You know, what is it about Auburn basketball, not Auburn basketball, Everett Little basketball? What is it that you guys have built there?
I think, you know, we just do so much together. You know, in the summertime, for our high school kids, we come in and we lift as a team in the morning at 7 o'clock. And we're lucky, you know, like, you know, I'm old school. So I'm smart enough to know what I don't know. It's like, for years, we're in there benching and squatting and curling and doing all that stuff. And again, I'm smart enough to know what I don't know. And I was lucky to meet BJ Grondin, who was a friend of Troy's and went to the University of Maine. And this is what he does. He works with athletes on being better athletes. And if you look at the NBA today, okay, again, I grew up in the 80s. I remember the New York Knicks, okay, when they were all like, you know, Charles Oakley and Anthony Mason, they were all big and muscle bound. You guys don't even know who those guys are. They were big and muscle bound, but that was the NBA in the 80s. Okay. But Kevin Durant said, hey, I can't bench press 185 pounds. Okay. But put a basketball in my hand and I'll kick your butt. Okay. And BJ comes in the summertime for us twice a week and works with our kids on lifting for strength or lifting for explosiveness and lifting for athleticism. And then we do some of the other stuff. I do the bodybuilding stuff with the kids on the other days. We do that at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, and everybody else in the summer, you know, kids in other schools, they're still sleeping. Okay. They're at the beach, they're hanging out. And then at 8:30, our varsity guys, they stay, or what potentially could be varsity guys, they stay and they coach our little kids. We do a little kids program from 8:30 until 10. That's our kindergarten through sixth grade. And then from 10 to 11:30, we run our program for our middle school kids. So that's when our high school kids go out and get something to eat, or hang out, or do something. But they come back in the gym at 11:30 and we practice for an hour and a half every day in the summer for 5 weeks or 6 weeks, whatever we can get in. And then we play games at night. And like I said, then our culture is, we're going to take you someplace and we're going to do something. And we've been to some pretty neat places in the summertime. And I'll tell you what, again, we've been to NC State, we've been to Princeton, we've been to Marshall, we've been to West Point, we've been to Old Dominion. Our kids can play. Our kids can play. We played against some teams where if anybody looked out on that court and said, there's no way that team can compete with the other team, Maine kids can play. They know how to play the right way. They know how to play the game. We might be out-athleted in some places or some games, but our kids can battle with the best of them. And that was a real eye-opener for our kids as well, because when we come back from that team camp and say, you guys just played with eight teams that would have won a state championship in Maine. So when we go back, you've got nothing to be scared of. Let's go out and take care of business.
Absolutely. So you're coming up over 20 years now, if you include your JV experience as a coach, over 20 years as a coach here in high school basketball. And I feel like you talked about growing up and the legends that were at some of these programs. And I feel like nowadays you don't really see that. You don't see the coaches at a program for 20, 30 years. Here you are coming off another state championship, 20 plus years. Sounds like still loving it, still wired in it and wanted to keep going. How have you been able to keep this going? Like, what keeps you motivated and wanting to keep coaching? Like, how come you aren't burnt out, maybe like that some of these other kids or other coaches get and don't last as long as 20 years? Like,
that's a great question. Yeah, I still don't think of myself like growing up in graduating in 90, looking at Mike McGee's and the Jim Bessies and the Kenny Lindloss and the Scott Rathams, and like, those are legends. It's funny, Coach Hanson and I were talking a couple of years ago saying, he said, Mike, you and I are the with the old veteran coaches now. And like, no, I can't be the old veteran coach. I'm not old enough. I'm 48, so I am old enough. What keeps me going, and I've said this a bunch of times, when I run my summer program, when we run our summer program, you know, every day in the summer, we're going to have 50 kids in the gym every single day. That's what keeps me going, you know. And hey, listen, like, six of those kids will never even come close to playing in our program. Like, you look out there and you're like, what is that kid doing here? But he's got nothing else. And you know what? Hey, we make it a point to say, hey, listen, this kid's been here every single day. God love this kid. He's having a great time. And I know he's killing this drill, but he's having fun. So let's have fun with him and let's enjoy it. Let's keep things in perspective. It's summer basketball. I mean, there's times that we're going to be competitive and do things, but there's other times we're going to go out and have fun and do some of that. So that's what keeps me going. That's what keeps me motivated and doing the things that we do. And it's just, yeah, I mean, it's what I love. It's who I am. I love doing this, and hopefully I'll be able to do it for a lot longer.
Yeah. So in doing my reading today too, I also saw the health scare a couple of years back or maybe a year back. What did that, how did that come into when evaluating basketball? Like did it going through that, did it make you miss the game, love the game more? Did it maybe say, make you say maybe, you know, it's time to back away from this and worry about myself? Like how did that affect the way you feel about the game?
Yeah. Well, it was probably kind of stupid. Like when, with my heart condition, they've been telling me for years, eventually we're going to get there. We're going to have to do surgery. So I did go to my cardiologist every 6 months. And finally, he said, okay, it's time. You have to have this surgery. So stupidly, thankfully, my wife wasn't with me. I said, can I do it after summer basketball? He said, okay, you can. But like, no later, he goes, this has to be done. It has to get taken care of. So, and then my next question was, will I be healed enough so I can coach during the season? And he said, yeah, I think you'll be okay. So, but it was a long year last year, and I was tired, cause I had my surgery at the end of August, and they say it takes a full year to really recover from everything. But, day two, sitting in the hospital bed, and they crack you open and you can't move and you can't do anything. And I look in and six guys walk in, with it's a boy balloons and stuff like that. And it was all guys from our team. You know, it tells you that you're doing something right and that you're making a mark where you're supposed to make it. But, it definitely didn't say it's time to step back or, ease up a little bit. I feel better. You know, I'm not tired like I used to be before my surgery. And hopefully I have a little bit more energy and, just as ready to go.
Yeah. So if things were all normal, you'd be in it right now. And now having won two state championships, you know what it's like to defend one. So what would going into this year be like if it were a normal year? Do you prepare differently defending a title versus chasing a title? Is it a different feel? Do you have to like kind of sit your players down like, hey, like that was last year, now it's this year. Like, how's the mindset different from going into a season as the defending champion versus trying to chase the championship?
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, we did say that after winning our first one the next year, going into Wall senior year, we said the same thing. Like, listen, we're not defending anything. This is your team now. This is a different team. So, we play different. We do things different. So let's just make sure we understand that. So I think, you know, whether there's a state championship this year or not, you know, I think it's the same thing. You know, you go into the seniors, especially and say, you know, this is your year. You've worked for this. We're not going to focus on what's going to happen at the end. Let's just focus on what's going to happen today and making ourselves better and having the year that you want to have.
Before we get up out of here, I want to hit on some random questions. This is my first one. We had Troy Barney's on a while back. I think it was the summertime. And it was actually maybe right after you guys had won states. And Troy was speaking finally of it. I think it was his senior year team. You guys were like, 17-1 or maybe like undefeated in the regular season, something like
18-0.
That. 18-0. And yeah. So that was a tough loss, and they should have won states that year. So I asked him, I said, your senior year team versus this 2020 team who just won states, if they went head-to-head, who would win? Do you have any input on that? He said his team would win, obviously.
I'm going to make somebody mad no matter what I say on that one. I'll tell you this. That Troy Varney's team, okay, and Coach McGee said it, because we went up and scouted Hamden that year, and I love Coach Bartlett, and Hamden, he runs a great program. You know, but I saw Hamden beat Lawrence in the prelim game at Hamden, and Coach McGee still says to me to this day, he goes, Mike, I wanted to grab you after that game and say, don't underestimate him. And we didn't, you know, we were definitely prepared for them. But I think like with Troy's group, like they'd never been to the Augusta Civic Center because that's where the tournament was for them back in that day. His junior year, we lost to Coney in a prelim game. So we never got to the tournament to play on that floor. And we went in as the number one seed. The game was at like 10 o'clock at night. And those Hamden kids, you know, they grew up in the tournament. Those kids have all played in it. So I think we were a little bit of a shock with that. And we picked the worst game to play our worst game. And Hamden played great. And Coach Bartlett had a great game plan. That was one of the best teams I ever coached, though. You know, they were phenomenal. They had all the pieces. And Troy was just the ultimate competitor. I mean, he battled with everything. He wasn't as athletic as Wall, but he was more physical and tougher in some ways. You know what I mean? He was good. He was real good. So I didn't answer your question, but I'm gonna say that Troy Varney's group, even though they didn't win a playoff, might be the best team that I've ever coached.
All right, so maybe the best team, maybe the most talented team. How about the most special team? And it could be special for a variety of reasons. You know, sometimes there's just that team, for whatever reason, just something special about them that just always sticks out. It could be like the 2-16 team. Could be the Barney's team. Could it be one of your state championships team? Like, what's the most special team, looking back on your almost 20 years at Edward Little?
We've had quite a few, but two that stand out to me. Well, I mean, last year's team, you know, was special for a lot of reasons. Like they weren't the most talented team that I've ever coached. You know what I mean? And they weren't the most talented team in the state, but they loved each other. That's probably one of the best teams I've ever coached. They didn't care who scored, who played, okay, who got the ball. Like they just wanted to win. And like I said, like I keep bringing this up, but when we went to team camps, we played some teams. Like when they looked over and saw us, you could see them just laughing, saying, "Look at us." And our boys just come out like they didn't know what to think. Like they were in shock that our boys would just physically just manhandle them. So last year's team is definitely, and that's nothing like with coaching either. You know what I mean? Like they just loved each other so much they were always with each other. So that was one of the groups. Troy's sophomore year, we were 5-13, and 10 of those losses were by 6 points or less. And Troy was like 1 year away from being like a special, special player. His junior year, he was like 26 a game. Yeah, he was special. And his sophomore year was like 12 a game, and he was good. But like, you know, we weren't super, super good, but we were in every game, and that was a really fun group. And the other group that really stands out to me, there's a kid played for me named Corey Terrio. He was our all-state player that year. But there was nothing else. Like, we were small. Actually, that's his junior year, my bad, because Kyle was on that group. Kyle Philbrook, okay, and Eric Drew and Ben Hartnett. We were small. We were tiny. And we got matched up in the Eastern Maine final with Bangor. And that's when Bangor, they were always big, but they had Weston. They had, I'm blanking out now. Sue Blue. Okay. They had, Bernstein. They were all 6'4" or bigger and big. And we were just a bunch of tiny little guards. Corey Terrio at 6'2", probably 170 was my center. And we just spread you out and cut and passed and attacked. And we lost to Bangor in the Eastern Main Final by like two. And that team, again, had no reason playing with Bangor. You know, physically, they were just so much better than us. But we just went out and just, we just spread the floor and just ran. And it was fun. Yeah. So those are three teams that stand out to me.
It's funny you mentioned Corey and Bo and Kyle. I worked hoop camp for two summers back in the day, and they were actually in camp at that point. They were actually still players back then. You could tell that they were going to be special, and they wound up being special. Yeah. So you don't coach for as long as you do without being competitive. I'm wondering, is there a particular coach or program when they come to town or when you look at the schedule, like, okay, I can't wait to go up against this guy. Is there somebody who just brings your competitive juices out that you just love going head-to-head against?
And like, there's a few, I think, like Coach Graffam at Oxford Hills, because I respect him so much, and he gets his kids to play hard. If you've ever been able to coach against any Oxford Hills team at Oxford Hills, okay, it's like going to the county. You know, when you went to the county back in the day, you know that you were 10 or 15 points down already, and going to Oxford Hills is the same way. Plus, he coached when I played, so that's a really special and neat thing to be able to see. Coach Russo, I have so much respect for at Portland just because of everything that he's done. He's done a great job, and yours, you got to make sure your kids are ready to play that because you know he gets his kids jacked up. They're going to play hard and attack you all the time. Put me on the spot. Tough. Think. we don't play Brunswick anymore with the new classification, but it's always good to play against Coach Hanson for the same reasons. But I mean, we're lucky. I mean, Coach Millington at South Portland, we don't play them. Okay. We could in some new schedule, but we won't this year. I mean, there's some great coaches, definitely.
You mentioned all the great players that you've had come through your program, and you got one who's coming back. He was a sophomore last year. We just had our first ever big time fantasy draft last week.
Yep.
And one of you guys was drafted, John Shea. Big John.
Yeah.
He was drafted number 7 overall. Is that too high, too low, or just right? Do you think he's going to surprise some people this year?
I think he's going to surprise some people. John has lost probably 35, 40 pounds.
Well, we heard. That's what people were saying on the podcast.
He's ever since the season ended, as soon as the quarantine stuff happened, it's been amazing because usually people gain weight. Well, John met with BJ, our trainer, and they talked about diet. And not being able to get into a gym during the initial quarantine stuff, just by diet alone, John lost pretty close to 30 pounds. And then things opened back up and he got in the gym. And he's had one of the best summers of a kid that I've coached. He's been in the gym every day. He's been working on his game every day. Seeing John, like a lot of kids today, thinks that he has to shoot threes to be able to be like a scholarship player or whatever that is. And it's funny, I just talked to him today about, you know, scholarship player and, you know, what that is and what it's not. But I said, let coaches decide that. You just work as hard as you can, and the coach is going to recruit you, okay, based on what they need, okay, not what you are. I mean, what you are is part of it. But but I said, John, listen, anybody can guard you at 18 feet, okay? Nobody can guard you when you're getting your butt on that block, you know, and he's unstoppable on the post. And he had a great summer working on that. And I said, listen, I still want you to expand your game, okay, and be able to do some of those things, be a trail four, you know, so let's work on that part as well. But he's had a really good summer. Whether that's too high or low, I mean, hey, I saw your list. There's some great players ahead of him, you know what I mean? And there's some great players behind, and it's tough. It's tough to tell. He's my guy, so I'm biased. I love John, and he's a winner. You know, he's a sophomore. He was a big part of us, a big, big part of us winning a state championship. So I think, hey, he should be on that list, and I think you guys did a great job with it.
And also, I think one of the games that people would have been looking forward to this year, and hopefully there is some sort of season, is the crosstown rivalry with Lewiston, right? Lewiston's going to be good this year, right? I'm guessing that's going to be a fun game. And could you speak to the rivalry? I like to talk to guys about the particular rivalries that they're involved in. Auburn-Lewiston, I haven't heard much about it. I mean, I know about it, but I haven't actually heard people talk about it that are in it. Can you talk about that rivalry?
Oh, it's great. You know, I mean, our kids, you know, with social media, again, our kids have grown up together. And all the kids grew up playing at the Y here in Auburn. So they've known each other their whole lives. And we play against each other in the summertime. Okay. And they see each other a lot. The last couple of years, okay, they have some really good players coming up through. And Ronnie's done a good job, building up excitement and energy in the program. They're going to be really good, really good. They got two guys who are 6'7" or bigger. They got some explosive and athletic guards. They're going to be a team to deal with in double A. There's no question about it. So, it's going to be interesting. Hopefully we'll be ready for them.
And hopefully if there is a regular season, double A North is going to be, it's going to be tough, right? You got Bangor's going to be good.
Yeah.
You guys, Lewiston, it's going to be competitive.
Yeah, no question. And Oxford Hills has some good young kids coming up through as well. And Chad Polkman always does a great job with Wyndham. I mean, they were a minute away from beating us last year in the playoffs. You know, he does a really good job with the kids that he has every single year.
So I'm going to try to get you out of here on one more, the most difficult question of the night. If you had to give me a starting five of Auburn guys in your time there, could you do it? Could you do it if you had to?
Okay.
Because I bet you your guys want to hear it. They want to hear from Coach. They want to hear from Coach if they crack your top five.
Okay. I'm going to go. Obviously, Troy. Okay. Wall. I'm going to go Corey Carrio. I'm going to go. Ian Malikas. And I'm going to go Kyle's my point guard. Kyle Philbrook's at the one.
I didn't think you were going to answer it. I'm happy you did, but I'm a little surprised you did.
I had to. But you know what? If you ask me it tomorrow, it might be a little bit different too.
Yeah.
But I'll think I'll be sitting in bed tonight saying, oh, shoot. Okay. So-and-so should have been there instead. There's so many. I've been blessed.
Yeah, it's a terrible luxury to have that you have to really sit there and think about who's going to go on my five. I mean, it just goes to show you guys have had tremendous team success, but incredible individual talent as well that's come through there in your time there.
They've made me look like a good coach. I've been blessed, definitely, no question.
Good answer right there. That's the politically correct answer right there. Before we get up out of here, I always give my guests a chance to say a little something if they want to say something, if there's any rumors you want to address, anything you want to say at all, this is your chance to say something before we get up out of here.
Hey, I just, you know, I think that we're lucky being in Maine. Like I said before, Maine high school basketball is a special, special thing. And hopefully we have our season this year as close to normal as we can. We all want to have, you know, championships and whatever else we can. And I'm not saying that we have to settle for things that are less than what we should have. But given the circumstances going on in our country, you know, the safety of our kids, and our parents and our grandparents and everybody else is definitely the most important thing. But if we can play and play safely, I think we've proven that we can, then we need to have that opportunity to do that and just enjoy the season, enjoy the competition, enjoy the preparation of the season and have fun. It's going to be another fun year, regardless of however it's played out.
Absolutely. Hopefully things get back to normal because I know personally I'm looking forward to just seeing a lot of great basketball this winter. And there's just so much talent all around the state, and I'm hoping that we can see some of that. But hey, thanks to Coach Adams for coming through on Big Time Hoops the podcast. One of the best going, two state rings, chasing that third, and just one of the best programs in the state. Just run the right way, and you can tell by the talent that comes out of there and just the character of the people that come out of there as well. So everyone speaks very, very high. That little program. So thank you, Coach, for coming through tonight.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
That's going to do it for this week's episode of Big Time Hoops, the podcast. Make sure you're checking out all of our previous episodes. Wherever you get your podcasts, they're up there. And we'll see you next week with another Big Time episode of Big Time Hoops. We'll see you.